Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Denise from Chicago. And you are listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, everybody, and hello particularly to Denise from Chicago, who's introduced this edition of the Tennis Podcast. Denise pointed out that Martina Navratilova, who Catherine spent some time with this week, won 12 WTA titles in Chicago. Imagine that. I mean, I didn't even know there was a tournament in Chicago, but apparently there was. Martina's won it 12 times, because if there's been a tournament, she's no doubt won it several. And Martina was presented with the Golden Racket Award by the Italian Tennis Federation this week. Lovely moment just before the rain started again. Stefan Edberg also won an award last week, but too, in Rome. So there's been lots of awards, and they've kind of managed to get some of the tennis played eventually as well. But very big thank you to Denise for introducing this edition of the Tennis Podcast. And Chicago, very much the city I would one day like to visit. Catherine is still just about in Rome, in the lounge. And is that sunshine I can see out of your window next to you, Catherine?
Yeah, it doesn't look like Rome because, in my experience, Rome looks wet and cold and grey, and it's flipping glorious outside of the window I am sitting next to at the moment. So I don't know what this Rome is, but I don't recognise it from the last week of my experience. Interestingly, just on the Golden Racket Award that Martina was awarded yesterday, and I'm very glad she was, and it was an incredibly touching moment that we covered on Prime, and Martina gave her speech in Italian, which was incredible. I was there behind the scenes with her when she was scripting it and rehearsing it, and she was checking with Daniela Hantikova, who's a fluent Italian speaker, that it all made sense and it sounded right, and I just loved the effort and the diligence and the care that she put into that, and I don't mean to piss on all of that, but she actually didn't win Rome. It's like pretty much the only tournament that Martina never won.
I did not know that.
Which, I mean, doesn't mean she's not worthy of a golden racket, and the brief for the award is, you know, in recognition of achievements in Rome and in the wider tennis world, so goes without saying that Martina is a no-brainer of a recipient, but ironically it is one of the only global titles that she never won.
Matt and I, meanwhile, have been sunning ourselves in the glorious British Isles. I mean, it has been non-stop sunshine, hasn't it, Matt?
For the tape, Catherine is giving us the middle finger.
I've got no humour about it, David. You've read the room badly there.
Oh, dear. Okay.
I got rained on sideways yesterday, David.
Sideways.
Sideways rain, yeah. Mm.
Okay.
Paris, though. Have you seen the forecast for Paris?
No.
Flimmin', I've done nothing but look at weather forecasts for elsewhere this week. It looks glorious in Paris.
It does.
Yes, please.
Yes.
Oh, how excellent.
Happy Roland Garros week, I suppose I should say. I've gone quite early, and I've already signed up to the media WhatsApp group, which I was excited to do, but day one, and I'm realising it's a mistake, because I've already had several notifications this morning that players such as Dan Aded is in the Suzanne Longven mix zone. And I, A, don't know who Dan Aded is, and B, am nowhere near the Suzanne Longven mix zone. So I've had to mute that chat already.
Okay.
But I am pumped for Roland Garros.
How marvellous. Well, yes, as we come to you, it is Monday. We are heading to Paris on Wednesday evening, just in time for the draw, hopefully this year, on Thursday. We were trying to get there in time for the draw last year as well. You may remember on a Eurostar, which involved, in the end, quite a bit of alcohol as we managed to get through the hours, and then the traffic jam, and yeah. Catherine didn't have too much of a sense of humour back that either, as I recall. But anyway, we'll have lots and lots of enjoyment at Roland Garros this time to look forward to. And before we get on to talking about what's gone on in Rome, aside from sideways rain, let's remind you that this edition of the Tennis Podcast is brought to you in association with On Location. And they are the premium hospitality and experience providers. On Location provide packages via Steve Fergal's international tennis tours to all of the four Grand Slam tournaments, including the US Open, which is on sale now, with fantastic tickets to watch the action throughout the year's final Grand Slam tournament at Flushing Meadows in New York. And hospitality packages if you really want to kick back and relax and have all-inclusive food and drinks in a lounge, a rooftop bar in between matches. They've got all of that. And we have got a 5% discount for Tennis Podcast listeners. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast. That's toursfortennis.com/podcast. Click the US Open discount section and enter the code FINALSLAM. For 5% off your ticket and hospitality package. You have until May the 31st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time to get your discount and check your show notes for the fine print. Right, Rome.
Had plans to go to a rooftop bar in Rome, David, but it pissed it down relentlessly for a solid week. So I mean, we'll have to go to a rooftop bar in New York to make up for it.
You're really not exaggerating either, are you, Catherine? Because, I've had some...
I've never known anything like it.
I've had some weather in Rome over the years when I've been there. You know, I've seen days rained out. I've never seen anything like this. And I mean, the experience you had, I think, was right up there with anything I've ever had.
Yeah, and I was with, you know, lots of ex-tennis players that between them have, you know, had decades and decades and decades on tour of going to tournaments week in, week out, and they hadn't known anything like it either. Although, having said that, the tournament finished on time, didn't it? So there must have been lots and lots of hours there where it wasn't raining. I mean, quite frankly, if the tournament hadn't been on clay, we'd be in the second round right now, because most of the matches were played in rain of some degree of heaviness, and I actually think the tennis was pretty good quality, largely in spite of that. But yeah, if this tournament weren't on clay, I mean it would be chaos the like of which we might never have seen before. But they were able to get the matches played in, you know, when the rain eased to just not even light drizzle. I was going to say light drizzle there. Nope, just pretty heavy drizzle. It was right, players, grab your bags, off you go. Catherine, you're on air in five. Put the hood up. yeah, and it just an extraordinary week.
Look, at the same time, whilst it is not easy for tennis tournaments to get through schedules and to play all these matches when you have heavy rain. I've got a lot of experience from it from over the years at Queen's. It's really tough, and I don't want to do that down. At the same time, the way that Rome handled the rain and the... I mean, look, I'm afraid to say it, I'm going to have to do it again a week on from talking about what Madrid did with their doubles speeches and not allowing the players to talk. This time we've had a women's singles final, and it's been scheduled third match on Saturday after two men's semi-finals on a day forecast with heavy rain. So the chances are your not before is going to be pushed back at the very least. And the players, Elena Rybakina and Angelina Kalinina, have ended up getting onto court at 11 o'clock in the evening for a final, for the final of the tournament. And that's the treatment you're giving them when the following day the men's final is scheduled on its own with just the doubles final before it, some 3 hours before, and it's scheduled at 4 p.m. I mean, that is telling you exactly how this tournament views the women's game and women generally, I would say. And, before we talk about the tennis matches, a couple of tweets here. One from Pam Shriver, who tweeted, "These two WTA 1000s, Madrid and Rome, have been fiascos for women's tennis. There are no excuses, but many reasons for the fiascos." And this from Elise Cornet, a current player. "A little sad to see that the women's final of one of the biggest WTA events of the season is starting at 11 p.m. And she tweeted that at the time. "Nobody in the stands, of course, and not really cool for both players to start such an important match so late. Why not put both men's and women's finals tomorrow?" Now, Matt, there were a couple of conflicting messages coming out as to why they ended up playing that match on Saturday evening and not delaying it for the next day. One tweet from the L'Equipe journalist Quentin Moynet was saying that the players wanted to play on Saturday night and not Sunday. That seemed to be disputed in what Angelina Kalinina said in her press conference. She seemed to be saying, look, we don't have any say in it. We just do what we're told. So I'm not entirely sure what happened, but even if they did say, actually, let's just get it played, they shouldn't be getting out there. They shouldn't be asked and scheduled to play then, should they?
That's the point, I think. Yeah, like, tennis needs to have these red lines, and it needs to say it is simply not acceptable for, I would say, any match, really, to be starting at 11 o'clock at night, but certainly a final, which is, you know, a showpiece event. And the fact that you're scheduling the women's final after the two men's semi-final is so problematic. There was a day during Rome where you had two men's quarterfinals as singles matches, and that was it. I think it was Thursday. Those were the only two matches scheduled. Mm. And then you're trying to cram in the two men's semifinals and the women's final all on the same day. It just doesn't make sense if you're treating the women fairly to do it like that. And this is such a common thing in tennis. You know, just to sort of pick up on Pam's tweet there, there have been some very, very obvious, very egregious things which have been really appalling treatment of women over the last couple of weeks. We've had the inappropriate ball girl outfits. We've had the whole concept of model ball girls generally. We've had the women's doubles ceremony in Madrid that you referenced. We've had the prize money being so much lower in Rome. But something like this is the sort of thing that happens in tennis regularly. It just doesn't make big headlines, but it's the kind of thing where women are treated as second class, because the default of every single joint tennis event is to put the men as the final match of the tournament. So the whole sort of schedule of the tournament is built around those men. So yes, it's absolutely hard when you get rain, and I'm sure a lot of people were working very hard behind the scenes, but the system is in place as such that if there's any kind of difficulty, invariably it's the women who get shafted. And just off the top of my head, that's why Angelique Kerber played that Wimbledon final with a not before start time. That's why Jo Konta and Marketa Vondrosheva played their French Open semi-final at Roland Garros a few years ago on the third court. And that's why here the women had to play at 11 o'clock at night. So frankly, whether it was best for the women on that occasion to play at 11 rather than wait until the next day, I just think that shouldn't be the situation that we're in the first place. We should anticipate that and have both finals on the same day, or a final Saturday, a final Sunday. We need to give these matches proper space and proper time rather than trying to cram them in when you know that weather could come and you've not got a roof. So yeah, it's hard, but I just think tennis needs to be anticipating these things and showing that they're going out of their way to respect the women as much as the men.
Yeah, that's all incredibly well put from Matt. Better put than I could probably do it, because I'm sort of a bit clouded by just anger and fatigue. I just feel so tired by it all, because as Matt said, this is, you know, this deeply entrenched misogyny is week in, week out in tennis, and I don't like constantly being the person that's whinging about it. But if you don't talk about it, it'll keep happening. And I can't help but think about the next time, it's probably happening as we speak, the next time one of us individually or the podcast gets added on Twitter, you know, when we tweet something vaguely supportive of women or equal prize money, you know, the mentions, the replies that'll say, yeah, well, when women bring in the same number of eyeballs and the same amount of money to the sport, that's when they can have equal prize money. How on earth are women supposed to bring in equal eyeballs, equal sponsorship money, anywhere even close, when the showpiece event of one of its biggest tournaments is being put on court at 11 p.m. with barely anybody left in the stands watching because it's frigging cold and wet. The quality of the tennis wasn't very good because of what those players had to go through behind the scenes. I saw a lot of them behind the scenes trying to keep warm, trying to keep loose, trying to eat at the right times, and they both looked incredibly stressed, particularly Kalinina. You know, I had eyes on her a lot, and I was concerned that something like this would happen. She'd never won a WTA title before. She was playing not only for herself but to give some hope to the people of Ukraine, and there she is trying to put herself in a position to be able to play high quality tennis on the biggest stage in the most challenging possible conditions. And it is no wonder, really, to me, that she got injured, and that final was awful. Everything about that spectacle was horrible. I feel so sad and upset and uncomfortable thinking about it. Elena Rybakina was booed during the presentation, booed, because those fans had been sold a ticket for a women's singles final and a women's doubles final. They had to wait 4 hours-ish for it, being held outside the court. The women's doubles final took place on Pietrangeli court with absolutely no TV cameras, because that court had been de-rigged. So it sort of happened behind closed doors. You know, just a small example is the fact that, you know, we had come on air for Prime Video at the start of the day's play. So that's on air 12:45, I think we were. That I was in hair and makeup at 10:15. We stayed for build up to the women's final, but we could not stay for the end of it because you can't keep crew. I mean, legally, you cannot keep a crew around that long a day. So we, and probably every other TV station, had to pack up for the day. We're not there to cover the end of the women's final. You know, these ripple effects of just treating women as second-class citizens in an unconscious, a lot of the time, way are so deep and so many. And it's so frustrating and demoralizing.
Matt, it seems to me that there are two stories really from the women's final, and not specifically the final, because as we've covered, it ended up being a non-event in many ways, so sadly. But what you did have is Rybakina continuing her excellent form of the year and backing up the fact that she's won a Wimbledon title, she's reached an Australian Open final, she's won Indian Wells, and here she is now on clay winning Rome. Now, yes, she was assisted in winning Rome by three retirements along the way. Anna Kalinskaya, Iga Swiatek, of course, in the third set of their encounter. Really, really good match, which eventually Swiatek pulled some kind of muscle. We're still waiting to hear how bad it is, but I think the murmurs I'm hearing are that she may be not too badly hurt, and that she's hopefully going to be okay for Roland Garros. So fingers crossed there. And then obviously at 6-4, one love in the final, and Kalinina has also got injured. So Rybakina has been helped to the title there, but she still had to do her job. She still had to win the other matches. She still had to put up with all these rain delays. She is somebody who is continuing to deliver, to keep her side of the bargain, and looks just like a proper top player who isn't going anywhere week in, week out. The other story you've got is Kalinina generally, and that's what I'd rather talk about rather than this final, where she was unable to do herself justice for all the reasons we've covered. Just on, first of all, on Kalinina, I'd like to ask you, Matt, because I'm a casualty of this final starting as late as it did. I got a few games in, and I'd been up for since the early hours. I'm on a different kind of clock to a lot of these tennis matches, and I couldn't stay up. I had to go to bed, and I caught up with it the next day. So, just generally, Kalinina, what did she do? What sort of player is she? What got her to this final?
Well, I think incredible grit is probably the main thing that got her through these matches in Rome. She had some quite easy wins in the first couple of rounds against Blinkova and Kenin, but then it was three set battles against Madison Keys, Beatrice Haddad-Maia, the longest match of the year, which we talked about the other day, and then Veronika Kudermetova in the semi-final. And honestly, Kalinina has always been one of those players who I've probably classed as a bit tricky. And I've probably done that because I've seen that she's had some good results, but I've not really gone out of my way to watch her really closely and sort of figure out her game. But, you know, if you go back to this time last year, she reached the quarters in Charleston, she reached the quarters in Madrid, she got a lot of good wins. Remember her beating Emma Raducanu in Madrid last year. She also beat Petra Kvitova at the Australian Open this year. And she's done all this, you know, of course, a Ukrainian player with so much going on back home for her. And she really opened up this week about what life has been like. A bomb exploded near the academy where her parents are tennis coaches in Kyiv. A Russian assault last year caused her parents' home to be in ruins. Her hometown is under occupation, so the whole family have relocated to Kyiv, including her grandparents, who had lived in the same place for like over 60 years, just a massive thing for them to have to move. So all of that going on, and yet she's still put together some really, you know, impressive results, and this one, of course, being the best of her career so far. And in terms of her game, I still don't feel like I've really got a handle on what it is that makes her so dangerous, but she has a lot more firepower than I had realized, particularly against Kudermetova. I noticed that suddenly she would just inject some pace off either wing, especially on return a lot as well. And she's going to be one of those players who is, you know, seeded at Roland Garros, could well go deep there if a draw opens up, if she takes someone out as she did this week. Just a really, really impressive week. And, you know, I was sort of worried anyway about the accumulation of matches and fatigue going into that final. And then, as Catherine said, when it was delayed and she was trying to keep warm and keep fit, it was always just going to be so tough for her against Rybakina. She actually started really well and was up an early break, but then Rybakina sort of steadied and took control, and then the match sadly ended, as you said, in the second game of the second set. But a great week for her, and for Rybakina, as you said, it's just continuing that incredible consistency that she's shown all year that I honestly didn't expect her to be able to show. Yes, it's hard to read massively into this week because of the circumstances of three retirements, but she showed enough in one set against Iga Świątek, to be honest, for me, to make me think, okay, yeah, she can translate that big game to a slow clay court, and that bodes well for Roland Garros as well. Yeah,
great news for everybody else, for all the top players at Roland Garros, that Kalinina will be seeded. I think that's the top women's players breathe a sigh of relief, because she is definitive tricky.
Yeah, I sense she reads the game exceptionally well. And one of those players that you're not quite sure how she's done what she's done in a rally, but it's because she's just kind of predicted where it's going. Maybe I should get her to help me with my predictions, because they're not doing too well. But anyway, I'm going to be keeping an eye out for her and Rybakina. She's right in the argument. I mean, is Rybakina in the mix in Roland Garros?
Hang on, David. What's the argument?
Well, I mean, a year ago, weren't we saying that...
Is it mix adjacent?
Iga Świątek was a mix of one a year ago, right? Pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't think we're saying that this year.
Yeah. Would I be surprised if anyone other than Iga Świątek won the French Open? That's the question, isn't it?
You've got a few days.
Look, injury complicates it, doesn't it? We don't know if she's going to be fully fit. And I do think, as Matt pointed out in the last podcast, she hasn't got injured much. I mean, obviously, she's very young, and fingers crossed that continues. But she's not had to deal with this very much in her career, and she's somebody that's so sort of precise about everything in her world. Everything is ordered, and you know, we've seen her panic quite quickly in matches when she's knocked off axis a little bit. I do think the way to get to Świątek is to disrupt her and get her into a dogfight and a scrap. And I do just think, sort of in the wider sense, dealing with the weight of a niggle on her mind, even if it's not an injury severe enough to keep her out of Roland Garros, I just think mentally that's a bit of a disruptor that we've not really seen Świątek have to deal with before. So it does complicate things for me, but also she might be completely fine. So it's such a difficult conversation.
I would say Rybakina is definitely in the mix for me.
Ahead of Sabalenka, Matt?
Probably, yeah. Just because of the matchup with Świątek. I think if those two met at Roland Garros, I think there would be more doubt in my mind that Iga Świątek would be able to handle Rybakina's game. You know, we've seen Świątek beat Sabalenka this year. We haven't seen her beat Rybakina. And, you know, Rybakina has beaten Serena Williams at Roland Garros and reached the quarterfinals there a couple of years ago, lost 9-7 in the third to eventual finalist Pavlyuchenkova. You know, she was very close to being in the semi-finals. You know, if she'd beaten Pavlyuchenkova, she would have faced Tamara Zidanec in the semi-finals. She could have been a Roland Garros finalist a couple of years ago, Rybakina, and I think she's come on since then. So I don't feel as secure about her as I do Iga Świątek if Iga Świątek's, you know, fully fit. I sort of just expect her to move through that draw kind of easily. Whereas Rybakina, I could maybe see, you know, I don't think I would be that surprised if she went out early. But equally, I wouldn't be surprised if she was there in the second week and winning it, quite frankly, with her game, with her consistency, with the record she's had there before. Yeah, I think she's definitely in the mix, and I'm open to discussion about Arina Sabalenka, I suppose.
Okay.
Krejcikova?
She should be, shouldn't she?
Oh, he'd forgotten all about her. Look at him. You can tell.
Well, she needs to do more.
I've thrown Matt off axis now.
Look, we got plenty of time for mixed chat once we get to Paris in a couple of days' time.
True.
We're going to have podcasts coming out your ears, folks. Well, it's kind of what they do. But anyway... If you think the singles finalists had it rough with the weather, spare a thought for Storm Hunter and Elisa Mertens, who beat Jessica Pegula and Coco Gauff 6-4, 6-4 in a match that was shunted out onto another court eventually because they hadn't really got one set up. And then eventually I think the players probably just kicked up a sufficient amount of fuss that they did put it on. And it wasn't shown on TV anywhere, from what I could gather.
Yeah, and one of the things that I'm proudest of with Prime Video and our coverage of the sport over the last 5 years is that we always give the doubles finals, men's and women's, the full treatment. We do full presentation building up to them, full presentation afterwards. We try and interview the winners. You know, we give it the full works. And because of what happened on Saturday, it got no works. No works at all. I mean, if a tree falls in the woods and no one hears it, does it make a sound? Did Storm Hunter and Elisa Mertens make a sound? I couldn't tell you. I do know that Storm Hunter has to play singles qualifying at the French Open today or tomorrow. So, I mean, that was a stressful situation for her backstage on Saturday. So, you know, in a rock and a hard place situation, they went for the rock and played the match out on Pietrangeli. But that's a big win for those two. They're having a great year.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Right, what about the men's draw? Now, you may wonder what's happened to our chat about Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic losing to Holger Rune and Carlos Alcaraz losing. Well, we've done all that. That was last week. We did a podcast on Thursday night, so you can get your reflections and reaction to Rafael Nadal's announcement that he's not playing Roland Garros and that next year is likely to be his last in that show. And we are going to focus on the very tail end of the men's singles now, because it was eventually won in Rome by Daniil Medvedev. Yes, that was correct. Daniil Medvedev won his first ever clay court tournament, and he won Rome. I mean, that's pretty big. He beat Holger Rune 7-5, 7-5 in the final. This was the 20th title of Daniil Medvedev's career in his 20th different place. I mean, that... it's just getting ridiculous now. How many can he win still that he's never won before? I mean, it's, well, Roland Garros, for starters. That's coming up. There you go. Is Daniil Medvedev in the mix, Catherine?
Oh, he's gone there early. Yeah, I think he is. Ooh. He's in my mix.
Okay, Matt?
Yeah, I agree. I think he has to be, right?
I can't believe this. This is ridiculous. I can't believe what I'm hearing, folks.
Is he not in your mix, David?
No, he's not. Absolutely not.
Who's in your mix?
Carlos Alcaraz. Novak Djokovic.
A mix of one, of two. Okay.
I might add a couple more, but I don't know whether Daniil Medvedev is. I mean, No chance.
I will accept an argument about him not being in the mix, but as in, you know, that's up for debate. But I don't see, if he's not in the mix, then it's a mix of two. I don't know who you can argue is ahead of him.
Well, I can argue that I might see Runa and Sinner ahead of him, even though he's just beaten Runa.
Sinner?
Yeah. It's all about potential, Catherine.
Look, he's really, really good. He's really good. I think he'll, you know, might win the French Open one day. He's shown absolutely no signs of winning the French Open in 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
How on earth can you put him ahead of the Rome champion, the man who's going to be second seed and has already won a Grand Slam title? That is ludicrous to me. Please don't play this to me when Sinner wins the French Open in 3 weeks' time.
I will. I've clipped it up. It's my mix. I can put who I want in it.
Back me up here, Matt. Come on.
Oh.
It's not that I don't believe in the potential of Yannick Sinner, but...
No, Catherine, I'm with you on this one. I think the two other players would be Runa and Tsitsipas, but Medvedev beat them both this week. And therefore, you know, given his pedigree at Slams, he's already won one. I think he has to be in the mix. I also think Nadal not being there would be a good thing for Medvedev. I think that would be a horrible matchup for him on clay. But actually, I think Alcaraz would be a bad matchup for him on clay. But everyone else, I think Medvedev could beat. And I do think generally the whole Medvedev on clay thing has been overplayed in the past, particularly by Medvedev. I think he's caused himself some issues on that surface by getting it in his head. I mean, if you go back to 2019, he reached the semifinals of Monte Carlo on clay and the final of Barcelona on clay. He beat Novak Djokovic and Stefanos Tsitsipas that summer on clay. He was absolutely fine on that surface. Okay, not his best, for sure, but he was putting together some good results. Then we go in this strange pandemic period where he just got it in his head that he hated clay. And his results, yeah, they did sort of back that up. But then he also reached the Roland Garros quarterfinal as well. And this year, I think the main difference has been just a mental approach. I think he's had such incredible baked-in confidence, to use a term that we've used before, sort of through the hard court season. And I think he's almost said to himself, I don't want to lose that over the clay court swing like I might do if I approach it in the same way as before. I need to keep this going. I can play on this surface. And he's mentioned a couple of little things, the fact he's wearing new shoes this year, which I think seems to have sort of helped his movement on the surface. And he's got new strings as well, which he tried out in Australia but didn't really work. But generally, they've been really good for him this season. They've helped his depth on his shots. And perhaps those little elements have just made him believe a bit more that he can play on clay. And when he believes, he's a match for anyone because of his just ability generally. And he said he arrived in Rome feeling great and backed that up with his tennis all week. And yeah, I think there were things this week in Rome that would have thrown him off in the past, such as the weather and the conditions generally. He didn't let that get to him this week, and that feels like growth, I would say. So for me, I don't think he's a favourite at Roland Garros. I think Alcaraz and Djokovic I would put quite far ahead of him still. But I don't think I would be that surprised if Daniil Medvedev won it. That's his thing, to adapt to places, to win in different places, to show up at big events. And it would be cool if he did.
Well, it certainly would be cool if he did. It is interesting that he turned up in that press conference and just said, I feel really good. And he kept on referencing it all the way through the tournament as well.
Yeah, he felt great this week in Rome, which means he obviously spent less time in the sideways rain than I did. But yeah, I mean, even by Medvedev standards, you could feel it radiating off him. He said that he said he was feeling pretty good throughout the clay court season, Monte Carlo, Madrid. You know, something was starting to click. But then he said he just showed up in Rome and instantly felt it on the practice court. instantly felt great and was able to carry that through the week, which I do find interesting. And he's not doing anything different on the surface. I think we've all fallen for a Medvedev troll, exactly as Matt says, for the past few years. He's been telling us clay is for dogs.
But he's trolling himself
and I
as
hate
well.
The stuff and it's dreadful. I can't... He's trolling himself and we've all fallen for it. He's just completely changed his attitude. I think a lot of that is feeling fresh. You know, going back to the last time I saw him play in Italy, that was Turin, the ATP Finals at the end of last season, and he was just utterly frazzled. I think he lost three incredibly close matches there, and he just looked gone mentally and emotionally. I think he's got the energy to be right in it at the moment, and I think he's always been a pretty decent clay court player. Maybe not quite as good as on other surfaces, but I think he's always had a bit of an existential confusion crisis about surfaces until I've actually just checked. They've just updated his bio on the ATP website to say that his favourite surface is hard courts. I think since he announced literally on the court in Indian Wells, I'm a hard court specialist, somebody at the ATP said, we need to change the bio, guys, because definitely until recently it said favourite surface is grass. He's not really ever done anything on grass.
For just a second, I thought you were going to say clay, which would have really amused me.
No, but I mean, that he's had better results on clay than on grass. So, I think he can win on anything, really. Look, it would surprise me more than if Djokovic or Alcaraz won it, but he's in the mix.
He did a
and
dance.
I love to see it.
He did a dance after beating Stefanos Tsitsipas. If you know the Twister, it was a kind of...
It's just the twist, David.
All right, then. And it goes like this. And that's what he did. And he really wasn't great, but it also was great. And it was also, unless we are mistaken, Matt... We were watching Amazon Prime Video's coverage, and unfortunately they cut to a slow motion of it when we think Catherine was replicating it on screen. Was that happening?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've done nothing but replicate it for the last 48 hours. I replicated it in front of Daniil Medvedev. I don't know what came over me. He was backstage having a quiet moment with his wife, trying to prepare for one of his biggest matches of the year, and he obviously came on the podcast during Indian Wells and was very generous with his time and recognised me and gave me a little wave and give me an inch and apparently I take a mile and I just did a mini twist I'm going to be thinking about that every day for the rest of my life. Deep in the shame well. Deep. Yeah.
What do we think of what Holger Rune put up over the last week? I mean, obviously, fantastic wins over Novak Djokovic, and then this really big win. I mean, it almost feels as big a win over Casper Ruud.
Sorry to interrupt, David, but there is very one key element. Yeah. We need to stay on the twist for a moment longer. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was...
Take it away,
I mean,
Matt.
It was great anyway. I burst out laughing as soon as he did it. I thought it was just, you know, another sort of slightly weird, quirky, dorky, funny Medvedev moment. It then transpired, thanks to people's excellent memories. Something that I'd forgotten is that Tsitsipas did a dance after beating Medvedev in Cincinnati last year. I would say it was a version of the twist. It wasn't quite the same, but it was, you know, that was the basic element. And so Medvedev, we know, remembers everything, and I am convinced that this is another one of his trolls. He hasn't actually said that in any of his interviews, but I refuse to believe that it's anything other than that, and I love it so much. It's I cannot get enough. It's yet another beautiful element to this rivalry that they have, and I just want to know where it goes next, you know. If Tsitsipas wins their next match, is he breaking out another dance? If Medvedev wins, is he setting the bar at something else? You know, they can keep this going, I think, and I'm here for it. It was really, really great Medvedev stuff.
So Holger Rune, who was the man on the other end of this, 7-5, 7-5.
Alrighty then.
he lost the final against Dani Medvedev, but he put up a right good show, I thought. You know, he still came out and showed what he got, different gears to his game. I mean, I love the fact that when you watch him play, he seems to come out with his standard game, which is good enough to beat most people. And actually, I think it's what beat Djokovic, really. He kind of decided to just take Djokovic on at his own game for the most part and overcame him in that way, because I don't think Djokovic was quite at his best, obviously. But then against Casper Ruud, he was getting bullied again. And he was 4-0 down in their head-to-head. He had lost at the French Open last year against him. He's lost the first set of this one. He's a breakdown, and he's just getting, to me, it looked like Casper Ruud, big brother, coming out to show little brother a thing or two, you know, who's boss, and I'm just going to come out and just, you're nothing to me. Not like when Casper Ruud plays against Nadal and he's inhibited and he's overwhelmed and he's the little brother. This was him wanting to put this kid in his place with his big game, and he did it for an hour, and then Rune just went crazy in terms of what he came back with. He was just like a little tornado of a player who just showed him a completely different look throughout the next set and a half, and Ruud had no answer whatsoever. And I was really surprised by how he fell away. I mean, that was a poor loss in the end for Casper Ruud, but a brilliant win. Not as maybe headline grabbing as the Djokovic win, but maybe as important. Don't you think, Matt?
Yes, I think so. I think it's very important that he overturned that head to head. You know, once you start being 5-0 down against someone, that can become a thing. And he's made sure that, you know, he's got some real confidence to take into his next match with Casper Ruud. And I completely agree with you, David, about that injection of pace, that gear that he has. The one thing I would say, however, is I'm a little bit concerned about his durability, his physicality, I suppose. I've just been looking at him during this clay court season, and he has played so many three-set matches. I think half of his matches over the clay court swing have been three-setters. And that's fine, because he's won a lot of them. He's reached the final in Monte Carlo, title in Munich, early defeat in Madrid, and then the final again in Rome. Like, it's been fantastic. But I do think that maybe he doesn't quite have the endurance, the physicality yet, and I'm also thinking ahead to Roland Garros, where it becomes best of five sets, to be able to afford those slightly slow starts and suddenly getting it right. I feel like he needs to be coming out a bit stronger in matches and winning them in straight sets. You know, just looking at his record, he went three sets with Alexei Popperin. Like, sure, Alexei Popperin is a dangerous player, but he's not in Rune's class. I feel like Rune should be trying to win that in straight sets. I'm sure he was, but he should be winning that in straight sets. He went three sets with Bublik in Madrid. He went three sets with Alejandro Davidovich Fokina in Madrid. And I think that was because he was so tired from Munich, where he'd just gone three sets with Bortic van der Zandskulp in the final. Like, there's been a kind of accumulation, and his tennis has been brilliant, and I was absolutely won over by him against Djokovic. And yeah, I think I declared he was in my Roland Garros mix a few days ago. But just seeing the way he faded in that final against Medvedev those last few games, and just this thought in my mind crystallizing about whether he can keep it together, and that's been over three sets, I've started to have some doubts over whether he can actually do it over five sets.
Have you taken him out of your mix then?
I think I might have done, which I realize is very, you know, reactive of me, but the evidence is there, I think, that he needs to show a little more to be able for me to have real confidence that he can just do it over best of five over 2 weeks. It's a very physical slam, and that is my one concern, because the tennis is right there. The tennis is outstanding.
Thank you, Catherine.
Agree. No notes. agree. He's teetering on the edge of my mix, but the seven best of five set matches element gives me pause. And it's not a fitness thing. I mean, there is no sinew of his body that isn't maximized for athletic effect. Maybe it's a just maturing into his body thing. Maybe he's just unfortunate and has a, you know, slightly more injury niggle prone body than other people. I don't know, but that is, yeah, no notes on what Matt said. That is a concern at the most physical slam.
And he's a very young bloke who this is all new to, and he does look tired, and this sort of week is going to make you feel more tired. If you're young and, as I think, as emotional as he is, who puts so much into it, and he's going to be drained. I think he could be vulnerable, actually, in early rounds if he played the wrong player early on. I think he could be vulnerable at Roland Garros. So, you know, here I am playing musical chairs with my mix as well. I might have Medvedev in by the time the end of the week comes. But anyway, that's my prerogative. It's my mix. Right, what about the doubles? Hugo Nies and Jan Zielinski beat Robin Haase and Botik van der Zandschulp 7-5, 6-1 in the doubles final. They are number one in the race. Wow. And there was much frolicking in the clay.
Yeah,
in the
surely
rain.
The first Monegasque tennis player to ever be ranked number one. I'm going to call it without researching that. I reckon that is true. Yeah, the heavens opened pretty much on match point. So the presentation ceremony happened in a sort of, well, what was quickly turning into a swimming pool. It was scenes out there on Centrale. Just very, very quickly, one last thing to mention from the men's final and Medvedev winning. It elevates him to world number two and elevates his seeding at Roland Garros to two and pushes Djokovic down to three, which obviously means Djokovic could face Alcaraz before the final. Depends on the draw, whether that ends up being significant, but I definitely think Djokovic would rather be second seed than third seed.
Yeah, it does feel like quite an important draw generally to be on the certain side. But anyway, it's going to be fascinating. Can't wait. Right, we've had some news in the tennis world off the court over the last week. It involves Simona Halep. She's been charged with a second separate anti-doping breach for irregularities found in her biological passport. So what is a biological passport? Well, according to WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, the fundamental principle of the athlete biological passport is to monitor selected biological variables over time that indirectly reveal the effects of doping, rather than attempting to detect the doping substance or method itself. Nicole Sapsted, the Senior Director for Anti-Doping at the ITIA, said, "We understand that today's announcement adds complexity to an already high-profile situation. From the outset of this process, and indeed any other at the ITIA, we have remained committed to engaging with Ms. Halep in an empathetic, efficient and timely manner. We do, of course, appreciate there is a great deal of media interest in these cases. It would be inappropriate for us to comment on specifics until the conclusion of the process, but we will continue to engage with the Sport Resolutions Independent Tribunal and Ms. Halep's representatives as expeditiously as possible." Well, I think it's fair to say that she might disagree about Halep, that is, about the manner in which she's been engaged with. Certainly her statement is pretty strong. This is what she had to say in response. "Since October the 7th, when I got charged by the ITIA for a suspicion of doping, I have lived the worst nightmare I've ever gone through in my life. Not only has my name been soiled in the worst possible way, but I am facing a constant determination from the ITIA, for a reason that I cannot understand, to prove my guilt, which I haven't ever even thought of taking any illicit substance." It's pretty strong words, accusing them of trying to prove her guilt. She went on to say, "I tried two times to have the opportunity to be judged by an independent tribunal, and the ITIA has constantly found reasons to postpone. Now that we have clearly established that I've been victim of contamination, they came up with a so-called not normal evolution of my blood. Three world-renowned experts that have studied my blood tests have been extremely clear that my blood is totally normal. I feel helpless facing such harassment and a motivation on their behalf to prove me guilty of something I didn't do. Once again, all my life I have been totally against any sort of cheating. It doesn't align with my values. The only thing I hope for at this point is to have the possibility to finally access the independent and impartial judges in a tribunal that will give me the chance to prove my innocence. I have full trust in justice, and I look forward to finally being able to present my case at my hearing that is scheduled at the end of May. So that'll be coming soon by the looks of things, after several delays by the ITIA. Hallett goes on to say, she says, the support of my loved ones, the tennis world and my fans have given me the courage to continue to practice every day and fight for the truth. I can't thank you more for that. I mean, they're very strong words, aren't they? And particularly the words that come off the page, Catherine, is the accusation that the ITIA is trying to prove her guilt and using the word harassment. I mean, those are pretty major finger pointings that she says
I have full trust in justice, but she's also pretty much alleging a conspiracy in that statement, and she may well have evidence to back that up. I don't know, but she doesn't present that evidence in the statement. I from the outside can't see what motivation the authorities, the ITIA, would have for wanting to frame, to concoct a conviction of doping for a former world number one and two-time Grand Slam champion. I don't see any motive for the sport to want to do that. You know, it's a terrible look for the sport that this is happening. I do have sympathy with her about the length of time the process is taking. That must be incredibly difficult for her. But equally, I want the process to be as thorough as it needs to be. You know, I understand why it takes a lot of time. You know, think of how long criminal cases can take to come to trial, and that must be difficult for everybody involved. But equally, it's just not something you want to be shortcutting, because the stakes are so, so high, and there's pretty meticulous forensic stuff involved in terms of evidence. So while I'm sympathetic, I also think, well, you know, it takes the time that it takes. And I just, this is completely unspecific to Simona Halep, her case, her statement, but I do, you know, I've watched enough documentaries and researched enough doping cases to know that, you know, every convicted doper in history pretty much has denied doping, sometimes continually denies doping, sometimes eventually ends up confessing, whatever it is. I just have a policy of not really reading anything into statements of denial, no matter who it is or what the situation is. That is nothing to do with Simona Halep, who I've only ever had positive experiences of, and there are plenty of people in tennis who will tell you what a straight as an arrow person she is and how shocked they were by these accusations. I've only ever had positive experiences, but I just don't really set much store by denials in these situations.
Fair enough. We'll keep an eye out and see what comes next in that case, and it sounds as though we're going to get an announcement to that effect very soon. Matt mentioned earlier on that qualifying at Roland Garros started today, and a few notes about who's in it and who's been drawn against whom. The women's draw, Camila Osorio is the top seed in the same section as Mira Andreeva, who has actually had a win already, I think. I saw her name come up, and you may remember she had a fantastic run in Madrid a couple of weeks ago. Former finalist of the tournament, Sofia Kenin. Hard to believe, Sofia Kenin, who was a Roland Garros finalist just, what, 2.5 years ago? She's in qualifying, as is former semi-finalist Tamara Zidanšek. They're in the draw. This has to be the best draw of the whole tournament. Tamara Korpach will play Harmony Tan in round two if they get past their respective opponents Bjorklund and Herzog. Remind us, Matt, who Korpach and Harmony Tan are and why it's relevant.
They're the Phil and Holly of tennis.
The Phil and Holly?
The Phil and Holly of the tennis world. With apologies to non-UK viewers, yeah, who probably don't know what I'm on about.
If you're a UK listener, you know that that's a reference to this morning and a falling out. And that's what Corpatch and Harmony Tan had. And if you're not British, now you do know. Anything else you'd like to add, Matt?
Well, only that Corpatch put up so many statements on Instagram that week during Wimbledon, where she was meant to be playing doubles with Harmony Tan, but Harmony Tan pulled out of the doubles because she was having a run in the singles, notably beating Serena Williams. And Corpatch wrote, "If you can't play the day after a three-hour match, you can't play professional." And that is what I always remember about their aggro. So, look, nothing against Miriam Bjorklund and Polona Herzog, but I really want Tamara Corpatch and Harmony Tan to face off.
Yeah. Okay, well, fingers crossed. Elsewhere, Storm Hunter is up against Victoria Golubic in round one. Clara Towson, remember her? Haven't heard too much about her recently. She's up against Katie Swan of Great Britain. Another British player, Fran Jones, is playing Coco Vandeweghe. He was a US Open and an Australian Open semi-finalist. So that's quite a first round. In the men's draw, Aslan Karatsev is the top seed in qualifying. I can't believe he's not in the main draw. Blimey, he's facing Pierre Hugues-Bert.
Well, it's because of entry lists being made, you know, weeks in advance. I think his live ranking is plenty good enough now to get him in to a Grand Slam main draw. But, yeah, he is in qualifying for Roland Garros for the time being.
Well, poor old Pierre Hugues-Bert can't catch a break, can he? Getting Karatsev first round qualifying. Anyway, Brandon Holt, Tracy Austin's son, is looking to qualify for a third straight Grand Slam. Luca Puy against Thomas Mahatch is in round one. Yannick Hanfmann and Fabien Marijan in the draw as well. They had fantastic weeks last week in Rome, so it'll be really interesting. I always love seeing how these players who do really well at a big tournament in advance end up faring when they get to the biggest tournaments of them all, one of the Grand Slams. We're going to be there from Wednesday evening. The draw is going to be at 2 o'clock local time on Thursday. We're going to be at the media day as well on Friday. It's coming thick and fast, folks. We're going to have a couple of great podcasts for you then, and we're also going to have, for Friends of the Tennis Podcast, our next edition of Roland Garros Relived. And this one is going to focus on the Four Musketeers, which has been quite a job for Matt to research. He has spent numerous hours in the Wimbledon Library. I think I saw a pile of about 12 books in front of you at one stage, Matt, and hardly any of them in English. So you've really been putting it in. I've interviewed Christopher Clary, who was able to interview a couple of the Musketeers back in the 90s, and I also spoke to Guy Forget, who had a lot of experiences with them during his career and some great memories. And we'll be able to give us the idea of the show really is to try to give us a sense of what the Musketeers, Lacoste, Cochet, Barotra and Brignon, what they did for French tennis and how important they were to French culture generally. I mean, they really are an unknown to me in many ways, apart from very surface knowledge of Lacoste being a label on clothing and the fact that they were players in the 20s and that they won a lot. But I don't know anything about them really. So absolutely fascinated to dig into it all, and that show will be coming for you late next week. For Friends of the Tennis Podcast, we've also released a couple of weeks ago Nick Bollettieri Tennis Relived show. We're going to have Q&A shows, we're going to have a review show after the tournament's over at French Open, as well as we always do with our voice note contributors. So do become a friend of the Tennis Podcast if you'd like to get access to all of these, and that's how you help us to keep on going to the Grand Slams and to be able to produce all these podcasts that we're doing at the moment, and we're hoping you enjoy them. Andy Murray has withdrawn from Roland Garros. That's a bit of news. He's going to rest up ahead of the grass. Is that a surprise to either of you at all? Do you think that's the right call on the surface of what you've seen? I mean, he's played a lot of clay court tennis.
Yeah, right, I guess, right call. Don't know. We'll see, won't we? That was good analysis, wasn't it? You're welcome. maybe not.
I suppose just with the context of his clay court season, I thought he might give Roland Garros a go. The fact that he's tried a bit on clay, I sort of think either have a clean break and skip the clay or play it. And he's sort of done a bit of a half and half thing, but he knows his body, and I think he would never forgive himself if he got injured at Roland Garros and wasn't able to play this grass court season, which he's been talking up, I think. And I think he genuinely believes he can put a result together, you know, at Queens, at Wimbledon. That's the priority for him. So it wasn't a huge surprise.
He also got a 6-3, 6-love thumping at the hands of Stan Wawrinka last week in a challenger. That kind of exactly helped the mood regarding clay court tennis. Talking of which, there are four tournaments on clay this week in the lead up to Roland Garros. The ATP Geneva 250 with Ruud, Fritz, Dimitrov and Zverev as the top four seeds. Lyon has Felix Auger-Aliassime, Cameron Norrie, Tommy Paul, Francisco Cerúndolo as the top four seeds. Jack Draper is playing his first event since Monte Carlo. The WTA has events in Strasbourg and Rabat. In Strasbourg there's Magda Linette and Elisa Mertens. Rabat's got Trevisan, Stevens, Parks, Sharif, Fernandez in the draw. And the first ever Burundian player in a WTA draw is as well taking part in Rabat. That is Sada Nahimana. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, but that's a name to look out for as well. And finally, we have a mascot for this week, and it is the dearly departed Ernie. And we've got a lovely picture of Ernie, owned by Mario Rivera, who tells us, "We just said goodbye to him last year after 15 years of loyalty, love and happy memories. He was a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier and loved to take walks and spend time with family." And Ernie, I can tell you, has the kindest face. And we are going to have a picture of Ernie in our newsletter later this week, so you'll be able to have a look for yourself. I think we better not show it to Catherine before she gets on a flight, because she's not...
I've already seen it. Rest in doggy heaven, Ernie.
Oh, bless.
Lovely chap.
We've got our mascots. I've got Maisie, Catherine's got Xenia, Matt's got Darwin, Billie Jean has got Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss sponsoring her. And she's also been frolicking around in the grass over the weekend. I mean, a lovely time in the sun while Catherine was getting wet in the rain. We've got our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. Thank you to all of you for making this show possible. And we've got our shout-outs, Matt.
We have George in Brighton.
Hello, George.
Right, George.
Like George Diaz, the former umpire.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good, Catherine. And Brighton, where I was researching recently as a tournament that was held for 1 year only in 2000. And Catherine's travel partner from Rome, Tim Henman, won it. And it's also the tournament at which Goran Ivanišević broke all of his rackets and had to retire from a match as a result.
He was talking about that the other day, actually. Tim is minding my bags as we speak.
Good lad, Tim. Who else we got, Matt?
We've got Matt in Sydney.
Hello, Matt.
All right, Matt. Matt's a good name.
Matt says, "As an Australian, I've had a good laugh at the sensation joke. So, so true."
Like Matt Ebden, a sometime sensation.
Yeah, very good double sensation these days. Not as good as Rinky Hijikata and whoever his partner is. Jason Kubler. Yeah. So anyway, thank you. Thank you, Matt. Who else we got, Matt?
Finally, we've got Karen Maybom, who is in Pully, just outside Lausanne in Switzerland, but originally from Denmark.
Wow.
I feel like we know Karen.
We've definitely given Karen a shout out before, I think.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, which confident. Always makes me feel like, oh my goodness, I need to say something different to what I said last time. So what's the obvious thing that I would say? Don't say that. I mean, I've never been to Lausanne. I do know some people called Karen. How are we spelling Karen?
K-A-R-I-N.
All right. Well, I don't know any Karens with an I, so you're unique, Karen.
And Denmark.
Got anything, David?
Denmark, the home of Holger Rune. So, you know, formerly.
Oh, hang on. I thought Lausanne. Isn't Lausanne
Switzerland? Originally from Denmark.
Ah, Holger Rune. Right. Should have gone instantly down the Rune route. Well, sorry, Karen.
So I nearly bailed you out without any awkwardness. And then suddenly...
Wozniacki and Rune. Well done, Denmark. Well done, Karen.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I think that's about it for this edition of the Tennis Podcast. Catherine, you better go on board your plane. And we'll do all of this all over again when we get to Paris. We cannot wait. It is just 2 short days away. And then we're going to be there bringing you tennis podcasts every single day from next Sunday. We'll also have 2 preview shows for you as well. One after the draw, one after media day where we get to speak to all the players. And we've also got that Tennis Relived show as well about the 4 Musketeers. We hope you enjoy all of it. Thanks for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.